This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Works that use the bowl as sort of the spark or the center of the project. And examples that you'll see if you visit the museum today are Michael Strand's Bowls Around Town. And Michael Strand is a North Dakota-based potter who uses the bowl as sort of a vehicle to look at cultivations of community that come together around food and the preparation of food. So, for example, here in Portland, he sent out a bowl, a book, and a camera to the various firehouses as part of the Portland Fire and Rescue Department to document how firefighters sort of plan and prepare meals as a group. Because I didn't even know this before this project, but firefighters work essentially 24-hour shifts. So planning the meals together is a big part of the rotation.
I've seen them down at Safeway.
You have preparing materials. And actually, it's sort of funny that after this project, Michael is now considering creating a cookbook nationally of different firefighters' recipes. So it's funny how this sort of one bowl project, which began as a very sort of simple way of using the bowl as almost the lens or the eye to really examine, document, and unpack how communities come together around food and around sharing food has now inspired sort of further work around this same idea, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. So you see that downstairs, you see those bowls that he made and then pictures of firefighters. Who are the other groups who got bowls?
Yeah, so we also worked with Kitchen Commons, which is a really fantastic organization in North Portland that facilitate sort of education and culinary entrepreneurship opportunities for pretty much largely newer Americans, newer immigrant families, to give them opportunities to have access to things like communal kitchens, but also nutrition education. So we work with a number of their families, and on view you'll see a recipe for tamales for justice and the documentation that went along with that meal, which is really just lovely. We also worked with Project Grow, which is actually, it's a municipal organization that is a consortium of urban farmers and artists, and they're mentally and physically disabled adults who come together in a William Street facility to do creative work of all kinds, and they're just really, really fantastic individuals, and we're thrilled to work with them for this project. We're actually going to be continuing to work with them later in the summer in a sort of a supplementary piece as well.
There are other, so as part of that second part, engage in use, mm-hmm. or use. There are glass bowls on the wall just rotating. Is that part of it?
It is. And so this is a piece that Museum of Contemporary Craft visitors will recognize from 2009. It's a piece called Transference that by glass artist Andy Pico and sound artist Ethan Rose. And they reconfigured an installation which in 2009 was about 30 singing glass bowls, which now is 5 singing glass bowls for the sake of this exhibition. But essentially, it's a glass harmonica. And it's the same effect that sort of running your finger around the rim of a wine glass produces a resonance. But that installation looks at the bowl as a vehicle to project sound rather than contain it. So sort of inverting the traditional function of the bowl. And it's just a really beautiful ethereal component to the piece, which pairs really nicely with the project next to it by a collaborative called Craft Mystery Cult. And Craft Mystery Cult is composed of 3 artists, Stacey Jo Scott, Jovencio de la Paz, and Sonia Dahl, who are based in Oakland, California, Chicago, and Indonesia, respectively. And they looked at the bowl as sort of a stage for ritual. And really, their examination of the bowl sort of is very, very grand, sort of ranging from the idea of the hemisphere as a bowl, the largest bowl there can be, down to a very small handheld bowl that you can hold in the palm of your hand and sort of share in a ritualistic way with collaborators. So the two pieces pair really beautifully together.
So they work, the person in Indonesia is studying indigo, correct?
Yes.
So there's a large circle of blue cloth which represents the heavens.
Exactly, and yeah. Yes, it's sort of punctuated with a series of constellations in batik. And the whole piece is called A Setting for Leo, Lynx, Cassiopeia, and Cameo Pordalis, which I believe is the correct pronunciation. But essentially, it's a cluster of four constellations that back in January could be seen simultaneously in Chicago, Oakland, and Indonesia. So that's the significance there. But it's a beautiful piece.
This museum, Museum of Contemporary Craft, they've always had these labels that say touching harms the art, which you see, still see them, but this time there's a huge table made out of like a giant slice of tree, like tree trunk legs, and on it there are a bunch of bowls, and you can touch them.
That piece, that is a monolithic table made by Portland artist M.K. Guth, who I'm certain has been on this program before. And she just had a solo show at Merrillhurst University, which is where this table comes from. And it's a really, it's a beautiful piece that's perfect for the project, coordinated by Ayumi Horie, who's a potter based in Portland, Maine, actually. And what she did is she invited 18 makers, potters, wood turners, to contribute a bowl that would be part of a touch collection in the exhibition. And for Engage and Use, of course, I mean, we would be completely remiss to not actually have some engaging and using that happens on site as part of this show. And so, again, in this effort to sort of collapse cupboard and pedestal, we are offering these 18 bowls as a way to, for viewers to physically examine the tactile experience of everyday objects. So as I think, I mean, for all of us, we probably come in contact with a handful of bowls every day, from sort of our cereal in the morning to our dessert at night, and sort of haphazardly grabbing bowls off the shelf and pouring cereal into them, we don't really consider why this particular bowl. I mean, why is this bowl your favorite? How do we use it? How is it? How does it fit into the hand, or how is it maybe awkward to touch? I mean, what are the aesthetic considerations of the bowl? Why are we drawn to it, or why are we not drawn to the others that perhaps exist in the shelf and are never touched? And so, as having these 18 bowls on view and accessible to museum visitors, we're hoping that they then can handle a variety of bowls and sort of really interpret the very visceral and very tactile experience of them. And in so doing, sort of maybe re-examine that experience in everyday life as well.
And are they part of the library?
Yes. So in conjunction, this project is called Circulate, and it's two parts. And so for each of the 18 bowls on the touch table, there's a corresponding bowl that actually is able to be lent out to museum patrons.
Oh, okay. Like an identical one or a similar one bowl?
Similar. Same maker, never identical.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no, that's not true. In the case of one bowl by Klein Reed in New York, which is actually an industrially produced bowl, but, you know, high design bowl. In that case, they're identical, but otherwise they're all handmade. And so not identical, but corresponding, certainly. And so each of those bowls can actually be checked out as part of a lending library and used at home. And so this is where the use part comes in.
So you stick them in a box with some peanuts.
Exactly, some styrofoam peanuts.
Take it home for like a week.
Yeah, a week at a time. And so, and then the only thing that we ask is, of course, you treat it with care and that you document the experience of using it so then we can upload it to that Tumblr blog that I mentioned, objectfocusbowl.tumblr.com.
They got a Tumblr. Right.
Exactly, exactly. So we're hoping to sort of create this feedback loop of experience with this project.
Well, tell me a bit more about collecting stories. Why?
Sure.
The idea is that everyone has a bowl story somewhere. I'm sure we all had a, you know, a Winnie the Pooh cereal bowl when we were little, something similar.
Yeah, mine was Peter Rabbit. Same idea. But yes, everyone has a bowl story. It's really wonderful. And I mean, There was a lot of planning and conversations that went into this project, because initially when you propose to have an entire museum exhibition, and in fact a two-part museum exhibition entirely based on the idea of the bowl, I mean, there are many people that immediately balked at that idea, sort of in its early conceptual phases. But Namita Gupta-Wiggers, again, director and chief curator, and I had a number of conversations really relating this concept to the idea of design. And in the field of design, we have these iconic objects. You know, we have the Noguchi table and we have the Eames chair. And these objects are acknowledged for sort of their presence and the way that they shift and shape physical motion and sort of our physical interactions, but also in the way that they shape really sort of cultural formations and social interactions in everyday life. And so we were racking our brain to think of a famous bowl, which of course, I don't know, I couldn't do it. I don't know if you can do it, or a famous bowl designer. And this is where sort of the idea of reclaiming the bowl in the name of craft came about, is sort of bringing the bowl out of ubiquity and obscurity to really elevate it and promote it and discuss it as an object that similarly, sort of like the table, like the chair, shifts and shapes our motions in the world, but also really does so much to sort of cultivate our social and cultural life as individuals. I mean, if you think about it, even the earliest humans came together around the bowl. We carved out the earth to create the fire. We cooked over the fire using the bowl, and we sort of cupped our hands together to collect water. These early, early gestures. And so we really wanted to sort of unpack the bowl as a very culturally significant part of everyday life, but also of the development of sort of humanity at large. And so collecting these bowl stories really resonates with this idea of this, I guess, larger cultural significance of these everyday objects.
I'm Joseph Gallivan. This is Art Focus on KBOO Radio. Our guest is Sarah Margolis-Pinillo, the Associate Curator at Museum of Contemporary Crafts in Old Town, and she's here to talk about the exhibition Object Focus the Bowl. So some of the bowls I saw that I liked, there was one called Foam Bowl by Marcel Wanders, and this was like a big piece of sponge like you see in a clay studio, and it had been carved to the shape of a bowl and then soaked in slip or clay or something and then fired so that it became, you know, a hard bowl. It's pretty amazing. And it still had full of holes in it, you know, like some sea creature kind of thing. There was another one. It was a glass bowl and the bottom was pushed up and it was as though a pair of hands had pushed it up. So you had this imprint of two hands making the bowl gesture as part of a blown glass bowl. That was by Do Ho Su. And then Insect Nest with Ladle, which was like a sort of really messy clay project, sort of a ladle and a bowl, but I didn't like it. But there you go. So is the idea to pick out strange bowls? Because you also have very ordinary anonymous bowls.
Yes. Well, a combination thereof. I mean, there are certainly some strange ones in there, and I think you pinpointed some of the more peculiar but fascinating bowls in that collection. I mean, the Marcel Wanders piece is fantastic. He's a European designer who's known for sort of exploring that intersection between handmaking and industrial design, and so that foam bowl is just a really lovely, unique piece. Though Do Ho Su is also one of my personal favorites, and that really is something that visitors see when they first enter the exhibition, so it really sets the tone, I think, for the whole show. And this idea of sort of enshrining the cupped hands, sort of this very early essential bowl in a very clear bubble of hand-blown glass is just, I think, a wonderful comment on sort of the history and the resonance of the bowl itself as a form. And then that Jessica Jackson Hutchins piece, I mean, she is an artist who until very recently lived in Portland. And so she also sort of represents this high art, capital A art, bowl and the intersection of sort of art, craft, and design in a very unique way. But in terms of other bowls, I mean, we have a number of bowls from our collection from sort of early 20th century noted Oregonian potters, people like Lydia Herrick Hodge, who is very significant to the history of the institution, all the way up into very contemporary sort of local potters, people like Daniel DeFord, Liam Drain, whose piece actually uses a laser etching, so a very new technological process, but to sort of invoke very sort of historic iconography. And then, of course, Whitney Lowe is another sort of prominent person represented in the show. And we also have everyday bowls, as you mentioned, things like Big Grandma's bowl, which is actually on loan from Daniel DeFord, which is the bowl that he currently still mixes his bread dough in at home in his kitchen. And so it really does run the gamut. Mm-hmm. And I think in running the gamut, everyone has sort of an interesting, I mean, there are going to be bowls which you don't like the Jessica Jackson Hutchins, perhaps in your case, but then there are going to be bowls that you really take to and really identify with, mm-hmm. and can relate to your own history or upbringing or current sort of everyday life.
So there's another show on at the moment in upstairs. What are we listening to right now?
Yeah, I heard that chime in. So this is the music of Gabriel Craig, who's a metalsmith from Detroit, in collaboration with Michael Remsen, who is a composer in Houston. And the two of these artists met actually when Gabriel Craig, who's the metalsmith, was at a residency at the Center for Contemporary Craft. And he has been interested in sort of the he's been interested in sort of the ability of craft materials and craft processes to create music. It's a very multidisciplinary approach. And so what he's done is he's created a video and an installation that uses sort of footage and sound from forging, which is what we're listening to. This is the process of sort of honing and cultivating metal, and created this in partnership with the composer to create sort of a composition in video. And in conjunction with the video are featured Sound Forge itself, the installation, which is a series of three forged metal gates. They're essentially what they look like are upright xylophones in a way. And they have these rough-hewn metal keys that are sort of strung across these gates. And visitors are invited to take a series of wooden mallets from the wall and actually engage with the keys of these instruments. And so they can play along with the composition that we heard and sort of use the forging processes and sounds from it as inspiration to sort of contribute their own musical intonations to the piece.
So you can just go in, grab a mallet and start banging away.
Totally. Well, not bang, again, bang away gently.
Gently.
Yeah, they are hand-carved wooden mallets, and some of them
are
a little more delicate than others.
You're not worried about the
metal. Not so much worried about the metal gates, but the mallet's a little bit more so, but there are some very robust wooden mallets. So, yes, but we invite visitors to come in and engage however they'd like. And this piece has been really successful for all ages. So particularly for families, welcome you to come in and sort of play a little bit and think about how, again, it's a matter of sort of unpacking every day and thinking about how everyday processes and materials can really be a vehicle to create beautiful music.
Mm-hmm. And the composer is, he's a opera composer, basically, mm-hmm. in Houston.
Yeah, Michael. He's really, he works internationally. Mm-hmm. He's very, very talented, composing operas primarily. And we were thrilled to actually have he and Gabriel both in town for our opening last week, where they performed a live performance, actually engaging the Soundforge installation, the gates, as part of a piece. It was really, really mm-hmm. lovely.
So he samples this, and then it plays in the background as you're in the gallery.
Yes.
And then you make your own sort of melody on top.
Yes, precisely.
Is that right? And mm-hmm. anyone can do it.
Any
time of the day.
When we're open, which is okay. Tuesday through Saturday, 11 to 6.
Okay, let's listen to it for a minute. Okay, that was a little excerpt from Soundforge, the sound installation at Museum of Contemporary Craft. The metalsmith who made the things that you hit is Gabriel Craig, and the composer was Michael Remsen. So the rest of the show is, the bowl show. There are other things going on with restaurants you're working mm-hmm. with, is that correct?
Yes. And so I did want to mention one element of object focus, the bowl. And we really felt that in the show, again, because we're looking at such a ubiquitous everyday object, that we needed to really sort of break down the walls of the museum and reach out to the community in a more direct way. And so one way that we've done this is through a project called Portland Selects. And Portland Selects is a twofold endeavor. In the exhibition itself, you'll see on view a collection of 15 bowls on loan from area restaurateurs, chefs, cookbook authors, food writers, and sort of other professionals in the field. And in conjunction with the objects themselves, the 15 bowls on view, we produced a short 60 to 90 minute video interview with each of the lenders to sort of relay the significance of each object. And so included in this installation are, for example, people like Ken Forkish, who is the owner and baker at Ken's Artisan Bakery and Pizzeria, who lent us a reed bread proofing basket, where he actually tests and tries out all of his new recipes.
What is proofing?
I'm not a baker, but it's my understanding that it's a process in the rising process. You know how there's all this rising and kneading and punching, mm-hmm. but proofing is a part where you're letting it rise and sort of letting it sit. And these baskets apparently are the best way to do that. And so when he's testing out his new loaves for his cookbooks, he uses this particular object. So on the inside, you'll see layers and layers of flour and caked and sort of this mm-hmm. residue in there. Another great piece from that installation is on the from Vitale Paley, who's the owner of Paley's Place in the Northwest. And he lent us this really adorable, amazing object that he actually brought over with him from the former Soviet Republic when his family emigrated when he was 13 years old to New York. And so it's this little porcelain bowl, sort of like the Winnie the Pooh or the Peter Rabbit bowl that we were talking about, but it's painted with Cinderella. And so it's an object that he's had with him ever since he was 13, that traveled from what is now Russia to New York to Portland, Oregon, and beyond. So it really ranges from very professional toolkit bowls to very sentimental family domestic bowls, which is really wonderful to see and hear about. The second part of Portland Selects involves collaborations between local restaurants and potters that are facilitated by the museum. So as of June 1st, listeners and museum visitors can go into Park Street Kitchen, Irving Kitchen, and all five Hot Lips Pizza locations and experience a select menu item that's served out of a handcrafted ceramic bowl.
What are you going to get a Hot Lips out of a bowl?
A Hot Lips, they're serving all their in-house salads in handcrafted ceramic bowls for the summer. But in Irving Kitchen and at Park Street, we actually paired potters one-on-one with the head chef. So, for example, Chef Sarah Schaefer at Irving Street worked with Shelley Martin of Vitrified Studio to create a dish and vessel in tandem. So they worked sort of discussing seasonal menu items and what form the dish could take, and from there sort of devised the form of the vessel and sort of tested out different models and what have you. With Park Kitchen, we worked with Scott Dolick, who worked with Chris Paul, and there it's the same case where they devised, sort of started with the menu item seasonally, and then from there worked out the form and material for the bullets would be served in. And mm-hmm. so we feel that it's important to, we put so much emphasis, especially here in Portland, on what is on the plate, sort of sourcing locally and artisanally, that we feel like we should continue that conversation to the tableware itself. And we mm-hmm. hope that this sort of inspires that.
Are crafts people more prone to collaborate than maybe fine artists? So it sounds like you've got a lot of people doing stuff for you.
Yes, we do. I don't feel like I can speak to that entirely, but I do know that the craft community, and particularly the ceramics community and the Oregon Potters Association, were thrilled with this idea of this collaboration. And I think the restaurants and potters alike sort of both understood the spirit of it and were very, very receptive to the idea. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a lovely thing to sort of see through from this early sort of germ of an idea months and months ago to actually seeing the finished tableware now, which again will be sort of available for visitors and listeners to actually dine with as of June 1st.
Mm-hmm. We have 1 minute. You've got like 15 seconds to explain why museums are always trying to break down barriers and open themselves up to the community.
Certainly. Well, in the case of Museum of Contemporary Craft, I mean, we consider ourselves certainly a community organization, and we are sort of engaging with international conversations in the field of craft and design, but we are applying them and leveraging the local sort of zeitgeist here in Portland, and in a city that is so full of makers and tinkerers and hackers and just doers. We feel that we are the perfect organization to sort of unpack a little bit about what's happening here locally and sort of explore it in terms of what's going on internationally as well.
And it's not on Corbett anymore.
Okay. We're not on the hill.
Yeah, people still think it's where it used to be five years ago.
We're on Portland's Pearl District on Davis Street at Park.
Yeah. I'm Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Radio. This week, our guest was Sarah Margolis-Pinillo, the Associate Curator at Museum of Contemporary Craft. The show Object Focus, The Ball, runs through September 21st, and it's at 724 Northwest Davis Street. Also have a very good website, museumofcontemporarycraft.org. Sarah, thanks for coming in, talking to KBOO.
Thank you, Joseph.
Next week, Ava Lake will have Cynthia Larty on the show. Until then, good afternoon.
Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all. Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart.
You're listening to
The Portland School Board last night approved an increase in the budget for next year. The budget of $487 million will allow more teachers to be hired and will provide full course loads for students. This increase of $21 million from last year's budget is a result of a state-level proposal to allow modest increases in the state education budget. Teachers and students who rallied against proposed cuts have cheered the new budget. Once the new school board members are elected in today's election, they will need to give the final approval for the higher budget for Portland Public Schools. The Guantanamo Bay Naval Base in Cuba has shut down its wireless internet access due to online hacker threats from a group called Anonymous. The military networks are also blocking social networking sites like Facebook and Twitter. Anonymous had threatened to disrupt the base's activities as part of a global attempt to protest the treatment of the inmates at the base. This is to highlight the ongoing hunger strike of 103 out of the 166 prisoners at Guantanamo, as well as their indefinite imprisonment without trial. Save Our Adolescents from Prostitution, or SOAP, is the name of a new initiative by the East Portland Rotary Club to raise awareness of human trafficking in the city. They will be giving 10,000 small soap bars with a national anti-human trafficking hotline number label on them to hotels and motels throughout the metropolitan area. Victims can call the number 1-888-37-37888 or text Be Free to contact law enforcement officials. Rotary members will be passing out the soap bars from Monday to Saturday as part of the ongoing campaign through June. Portland has one of the highest rates of sex trafficking per capita in the U.S., particularly among underage girls, and the illicit sex industry is centered in East Portland. The North Portland Public Safety Action Committee will hold their monthly meeting tomorrow to discuss law enforcement's use of force. Portland police are currently negotiating with the U.S. Department of Justice after a federal report found that police use excessive force, particularly against people with mental illness. Tomorrow's panel will include members of the Portland Police Bureau and representatives of the Police of Neighborhood Involvement Crime Prevention. The meeting will be held at the historic Kenton Firehouse tomorrow at 2209 North Schofield from 7 to 9 p.m. This is Desiree Garcia with KBOO News. Thank you.